Welcome to the Sleep Tracy Monday audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:59 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is March 6th, and I thought I'd kick off with the S&P 500 insurance sector index because it's certainly looking like it's rolling over. We had the big downside Q reversal in the middle of 2022, and then it got right back up to test that peak, and now it's pulling back to test the region of the 200-day moving average. One thing that I've been often puzzled by is the ease with which insurance companies have been able to just tack on additional costs into premiums. And then we also have the outstanding performance of the insurance sector relative to banks, for example, in an environment where interest rates have been rising and fixed income has been under pressure. Then let's also think about United Health Group, because there are two things I think are worth thinking about. The first is that there's probably no company benefited more from Obamacare. And the demand for health insurance and the ability to raise prices contributed to a really phenomenally large gain over the course of the last 15 years. And now it is starting to roll over. It's encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. It's broken the sequence of higher reaction lows, and it's looking more like a process of mean reversion to the 1,000-day moving average, similar to what we had in 2019. And that would suggest that there's at least a 15 to 18% downside risk here before it approaches an area of potential support. But that's most particularly relevant for the Dow Jones industrial average, because United Healthcare is the largest constituent of the index because of its high price, and the Dow is a price-weighted index. So the Dow Jones was in negative territory today, and it's starting to pull down through the 200-day moving average. And then let's just also think about the fact that Jay Powell was testifying and in front of Congress today, and bond yields are holding steady here around the 4% level. He basically said there's no firm decision made about raising interest rates, either by 25 or 50 basis points or at all, and that they'll be guided by data, which they've been saying repeatedly for the last year. So there's no real change there. But then we still have a strong economy and worries about inflation. So then with yields at this level, one would have to think that the portfolios of insurance companies are not all that healthy. Then look at let's think about, for example, Admiral Group in the UK, so another insurance company, and big downward move over the course of this week, and then a little bit of steadier action in here today, but not quite able to recoup all of the decline. And of course, this is very much tied to the jump in yields that we've had in the UK. So certainly we see that some insurance companies are experiencing issues with rising rates, and others have been able to sidestep it. Of course, some of those insurance companies have also been benefiting from the relative strength of the stock market. Now, the UK 10-year is up to 3.75%, but inflation is still around 10%. So, even very conservative investors are disquieted by the run rate on that or I guess what we might consider the wallpapering to death of one's purchasing power. But the yield does look a little bit overbought in the short term, and I suspect that we are going to see at least some pause here. Now, one thing that I find interesting as well is there's a lot of commentary going on right now about what's going to be in the UK budget next week. And there's talk of potentially tax cuts, of adjustments to some of the pension rules for doctors in order to try and encourage people to stay inside the NHS and work more hours. So what this is also indicative of is a very clear and bold effort to try and shape the narrative ahead of the budget. Because it's not like the government is going to be in a position to go out and spend a lot. And we have to remember that a lot of the revenue-raising measures that are required really to get the public finances under control haven't yet started. Then we can also think about the fact that what's happening in Europe, the ECB has basically told European governments to get their deficits under control, or the European Commission has. Now, the German 10-year is up to about 2.64%, and it has broken out. This still looks like a reasonably consistent trend. Then, countries like Spain, for example, has also got to try and get its budget under control. And yields there are continuing to march higher. Now let's think about the spread, because whenever we see stress in the Eurozone, it's usually because spreads of Spanish or Italian debt are marching higher. But that is not the case, and they might be steadying, but not surging. So the risk in the Eurozone, I think, is reasonably well contained. And then the dollar is still quite steady, but not quite pushing up yet either. It's really just holding here in the region of the 200-day moving average. If the dollar were to break on the upside, and it certainly had the upward dynamic in the last couple of days, and on the dollar index, it's showing more strength. It hasn't quite yet, though, broken higher versus the euro. So that suggests that it is firming more versus other currencies. And the Japanese yen is certainly one of those. So there's a change of the guard going on in Japan. And the yen is weakening because investors are probably going to test the resolve of the new central banking team. But as long as the yen is going down, it's lending some nominal support to asset prices in Japan, and the TOPIX index has cleared the 2000 level again. So this has been a pretty lengthy range going on for the last 2 years, and within the context of a market that has really just broken out of what was a phenomenally long base formation. And consider that the TOPIX index dropped through 2000 in 1992 and really wasn't able to sustain a move up and through that level until about 2021. So this has been just a relative to the size of the base formation, it's not all that long. Even though it's 2 years in duration, then there is the clear potential that as the TOPIX breaks higher, it may easily contribute to additional weakness in the yen. Or I guess the other way around, that the weakness in the yen will contribute to a breakout for the TOPIX. And considering how long it's been ranging for, there's the potential that we're going to get an explosion higher and that Japanese equities are going to do substantially better. I think that when we think about some of the companies that have potential here, well, what I found interesting earlier this week was that Japan and South Korea are putting some of their animosity aside. Now, Mitsubishi Heavy has a contract from Lockheed Martin to build F-35s, so the chances are that that's what they're going to be doing. And there's going to be a lot more investment in military hardware. Then We can think about South Korea. So, Doosan Enerbility is the company that produces all the hardware for nuclear reactors. Whether one is thinking about small modular reactors from NuScale or from Rolls-Royce, it's Doosan Enerbility produces the components, and the share is starting to steady here from the region of the 1,000-day and 200-day moving averages. Now, of course, there's increasing animosity and I think posturing going on between the USA and China. And then the question I think many investors will be wondering about is what's going to happen with the renminbi? It's been exceptionally volatile. We had the huge move higher for the dollar in 2022, then came straight back down. Now it is firming again. And then when we think about China, it's very hard to avoid thinking about property. And the Hang Seng Properties Index was down a couple of percent in here today. So it is now it certainly put in a peak of near-term significance, and it's below the 200-day moving average. It's going to have to hold the 20,000 level if the benefit of the doubt is going to be given to the upside. And this is, I think, the big question is how much liquidity is China going to produce? They may not be as eager as the rest of the world to float the entire global economy with liquidity. And oil prices were in negative territory again in here today. Now, that's not only because of anticipation that the Fed might raise rates more, but also that China's growth is probably going to be closer to 5% than 6% this year, which suggests that they will not be as generous in terms of liquidity provision. Now, I think that it is very likely that China is going to ensure that the property sector does not crash, and they'll spend whatever it takes to ensure that that doesn't happen. But that doesn't mean that they want prices to surge higher either. Now, this range that oil prices have been in, we do have a backwardation, so there is a short-term supply deficit. But we also know that oil does not range in a tight manner for long, and when it does break out, it goes in a big way. And I suspect that we're going to see some additional ranging, and that it's going to continue to bob around here. But then we'll get a catalytic event, and the price will break. And when it does, then we're either going to get an explosion on the upside or an explosion on the downside. Well, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the most recent dynamic, and it's certainly been quite dynamic. It's been up one week, down the next. Well, in fact, I think to be more accurate, for a while there, it was up 3 weeks, down one, up 2 weeks, down two, up 1 week, down one, up 2 weeks, down one. So the chances are that if this pattern holds, the chances are that we'll have a couple of up weeks in the next couple of weeks. And then, of course, the big question is whether prices are going to pop up through 90 or down through that $80 level. And we're coming back down towards the lower side right now. One thing that I think is also very clear here is that commodity price inflation is rolling over. It's not just about oil being a little weaker in here today. Wheat prices have broken downwards, and that's amid speculation that the deal to export grain from Ukraine will be or via ship will be revitalized. But then corn prices have also started to roll over and broke lower in here this week. So we have certainly got the potential here that a lot of the things that people were worried about in terms of rampant food price inflation are starting to roll over. And soybeans haven't quite yet broken down, but they do look like they're susceptible to additional weakness. Then I think most people in the world are more concerned with what happens with rough rice, and that has also broken downwards in here. So it's very clearly now got type 2 top formation characteristics and breaking the succession of higher reaction lows in a really dynamic manner. So that is going to put pressure on agriculture prices. And Arabica coffee, having rebounded to test the region of the 200-day moving average, has pulled back. And the Invesco DB Agriculture Fund, which is futures based, is also now pulling back down through the 200-day moving average. There's obviously the potential here that prices are going to be under pressure. So when we think then about some of these fertilizer prices, we had a really big move on the upside last week from Mosaic, and now it's starting to ease back a bit. If agriculture prices continue lower, then that is going to be a headwind for some of these companies like ADM or Mosaic, or for example, Bunge, which is another one of these big agriculture traders. So there's obviously the risk there, and commodity prices starting to come back down. Well, that is a reflection of the tighter liquidity conditions that we have all over. And I think it's especially relevant right now to just look at some of these banking indices. The KRX Regional Bank Index is back down at the lower side of its range. So we had a really impressive pop on the upside in January, and then prices were pretty steady, but now they're starting to come back down again. And then the S&P 500 Banks Index has also been rolling over in the last couple of days. So having popped on the upside, then the breakout failed and is doing so in a more dynamic manner than the original breakout. So that is suggesting a retest of the low around 300. And then let's just think about the diversified financials, because they had been holding up a bit better, and they're now coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average as well. Now, the reason it's important to look at banks is because they're liquidity providers, and in a bull market, liquidity providers do well. But when they start to roll over, it's time to start paying attention. Now, we still have levered loans that are close to all-time peaks. And if we think about the high-yield market, we haven't had a spike in spreads, but the high-yield ETF was in negative territory today, and it has not been able to sustain a move up through the 200-day moving average and remains in a downtrend overall. So we're not quite out of the woods there either. The reality is that the higher interest rates go, the longer they stay high for, the more likely it is that the economy is going to slow down and that inflationary risk will be replaced with deflationary risk. And we've seen that happen in Brazil, where they raised rates aggressively. They took the rate up from 2% to 13.75% in the space of little more than a year. And they did it early. They started in early 2021. And they've held their rate there for the last 7 or 8 months. And the Brazilian real is starting to strengthen. So if we just look at it from the other way around and look at the real rising versus the dollar, then this looks like a base formation. And we have the incremental sequence of higher reaction lows, which tells us that investors have been buying it on the dip and they're becoming more impatient, that they're not willing to wait for as long to go down and buy the dip. So this, to me at least, suggests that Brazil's economy is primed for easing, that inflationary pressures have come down, They're currently around 5.7% for CPI versus the overnight rate of over 13%. So very large positive real interest rates. The central bank has been slow to cut rates because they're worried about inflation. So if we get economic weakness, they're going to start reducing rates. Now, historically, in the USA, when that has happened, then it's because the central bank has panicked and they've kept rates too high for too long. So maybe Brazil is going to have the same kind of risk. But that is then obviously also going to be very much dictated by what happens to commodity prices. And commodity prices are also starting to roll over. So we definitely need to see strength coming through in the Brazilian real in order to be very clearly supporting the stock market. Now, Mexico's market has broken on the upside, and the Mexican peso has been quite strong. If we look at the and contrast that with the Brazilian ETF, it's right at the lower side of the range. So the Brazilian economy has suffered because of the high interest rate environment and the tight conditions. When it does start to recover and rates start to come back down, then some of those more interest rate sensitive consumer fintech companies will start to thrive. PagSeguro is one of those, and it's still trading below $10. And it had been at 60 back in 2021, or even the average price between 2018 and 2020 was about 30. And it's trading on a single digit multiple. And that might be higher than it was on a trailing basis, but when we consider that other fintech companies have been trading on substantially higher multiples, and we can probably think that that's quite a positive. That value has certainly come back into the share. And companies like Block are still very much range bound. Now, I've been thinking quite a bit around Bitcoin. And the one thing that I think is most important to highlight is that the price, it's not just about that it encountered resistance at 25,000, but it's below the 1,000-day moving average. Now, let's just bring that back and look at the log scale. And if we put that 1,000-day moving average on a long-term chart, so this is a 60-month or 5-year moving average, then there hasn't been an occasion when the price traded below the 1,000-day moving average. And I think that is certainly something that we should be paying attention to, that the challenge here is, and I do want to put that on a weekly basis. The challenge is that when it hasn't done something before, and the consistency of the chart is no longer as strong as it was in the past, can we then also rely on past cycles to predict future behavior? Because the halving is in a year. And historically, going into the halving, we get an early rally, then prices come back down and test the lows. And then after the halving, that's when prices multiply. So we're a year out from the halving, so we should anticipate a good deal of volatility between now and then. And then subsequently, if prices are going to rally, then they would rally after the halving. And those big rallies in Bitcoin have also tended to coincide with really significant monetary accommodation. And it's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that by the time we get around to April of 2024, that interest rates will be on the way down and money printing will be ramping up in response to slowing economies and deflationary risks. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.